It's like eighth place trophies. They were well intended, but they fucked up the world. Mm-hmm. They taught people that losing is bad, and they taught indifference, and a lot of that has led to mass insecurity. Mm-hmm. I will tell you right now, eighth place trophies have done more emotional damage than social media, and it's not even close.
Attention is the number one asset.
Vayner Nation, how are you? Another episode of Podcasts with Friends, where we get three incredible people together with the hopes that they become friends. And more importantly, that all of you become friends with them as you get to discover their journeys. We'll talk, you know, we'll talk vulnerably and transparently about the journey, because I think that's more and more of what brings value. And we will get to know them. A big shout out to the Twitch army, twitch.tv/GaryBEE, GaryBEE.com/Twitch, if you want to join us live there. I also stream my entire day. It's just me sitting in the office. It's definitely some ASMR for all the entrepreneurs out there. And so really excited about it. Let's go around the horn and give everybody 2 or 3 minutes to say who they are and what they do. And then we'll go into it a little bit more. Ladies first, let's kick it off.
Hi, everyone. My name is Umi. I am a multidimensional artist, and my deepest intention is to create art that makes people feel warm and reminds them of the human connection that we have with one another. My music is very healing in its nature, but also very experimental. We're just talking about genres, and I don't really like to explain my music through genre because I really have a playful, childlike spirit. So I like to play with all different types of sounds, but I think my voice and my intention is like the thread that brings it all together. And meditation is also a big part of my music. So if you come to my shows, I always open with the meditation. My live streams, I always start and end with the meditation. So if you're interested in connecting more with your soul, I think my music will sit right in your belly for you. So that's who I am.
Where are you from?
I'm from Seattle.
Born and raised?
Born and raised. My mom's Japanese, so I spent also a lot of time in Japan. Every summer I would go out there.
It's amazing. You have family there.
I have family there.
So amazing, Umi. We'll get more into it. My man?
Well, firstly, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I've seen this office like on social media for so long, so it's a real honor to be here. And I'm looking forward to listening to your music as well. It sounds really cool. I need a bit of that in my life. So my name's Joe Wicks, also known as the Body Coach, and I'm from the UK. And I started out like most trainers in a park, you know, boot camps, one-to-one training, and I love that from the start. I always enjoyed getting people moving, and then I sort of pivoted and started sharing stuff on digital, you know, with Instagram video back in 2014. Short little 15-second videos. I called it Lean in 15, so it's like a 15 second. Remember in the old, it was 15 seconds back in the day. So a healthy recipe in 15 minutes on a 15 second video. That led to, you know, cookbooks and a publishing deal in the UK. And I've actually sold 4 million cookbooks from that idea. So that's pretty crazy. And then along the way, yeah, I launched a digital product. So like a PDF, quite sort of old school fitness plan, which nearly, you know, almost 1 million people signed up to. And more recently we launched fitness apps. We've sort of digitized the business. So essentially it's a fitness brand, but I do healthy cookbooks. I do a lot of work with kids. And my proudest achievement is during lockdown, I did a live stream every day for 18 weeks called PE with Joe, which was basically like a 30-minute workout for families and children. And that had 1 million live connections most days, and 100 million people took part. So that's my kind of proudest sort of career moment.
It was massive.
That's massive. And,
massive.
Yeah, and I just love the mission. You know, ultimately, I just think about getting people moving, get people cooking, essentially for their, you know, their physical but also their mental health. And that's the kind of North Star that I focus on. So there we go.
Good stuff.
That's inspiring.
Nice.
Thank you.
My friend?
What's up? My name is Jeff Staple. Mm. What up, Twitch? How you doing? Damn, I feel inferior. I have inferiority complex here, Gary.
Listen, bro, I felt pretty bad about myself after the two of them.
This is the Jersey side of the table. We're just two
idiots. Two OGs sitting on this side.
I guess, like, if you know anything about people lining up for sneakers or reselling sneakers or kids making streetwear, some people blame me for that, so I might be part of the problem there. I started my brand in 1997 called Staple. I started it by breaking into Parsons School of Design to hand silkscreen 12 shirts. I flipped them in Soho. 12 became 24, became 48. And I just continued on for there for just 25 years, still doing the same snowball, rolling over and over. Along the way, I collaborated on a shoe that many people know in 2002 called the Nike SB Dunk. That is one of the grails of sneaker culture. Like Sotheby's just sold one for $100,000.
Wow. Why that one for 100?
Rarity.
Is that one pushing that number now?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's crazy. Gary's like, put it on my shopping list. No, put it on my shopping
list. I have one. I just think I
what?
Yeah.
Like, let me sell that.
I just didn't realize it got up to that.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, I'm just, you know, trying to innovate for the next quarter century, trying to spread the word of like independent creativity and thinking that like me as a Chinese American first generation, my parents came here to have me as like the first blue passported like US citizen, that you don't have to be a doctor or a lawyer. Like, and I had to fight a lot of that with my traditional Chinese parents, that like there is another career path. So I'm trying to show young kids that, you know, hopefully it doesn't take them 25 years to do what I did. It just takes like three, if I can give them like, you know, the cheat codes to it.
I love that. Yes, we reply to the stream for the people that are asking. Big shout out to Dake, who's going back to YouTube because he doesn't want ads. Respect. Big shout out to Poker Pros NFT, who's buying tier one stubs so people don't have to get ads. There's a lot going on at Twitch. Wow. For the podcast that's listening at home, there's a lot going on in the live, which is a lot of fun. We'll interject them in a little bit. But Umi, back to you. You know, so okay, I hear what you're going with. And so I'm like, of course, you know, Japan is such a sacred place for the energy that you're bringing to the table. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
When did the meal that you are, because you had ingredients, right?
Back to, I like that.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? You're into music. You have this Japanese part of your family. Like, when do you think you started wanting to be who you are? Or when did you think you could have begun to believe you could be who you are? Or when did things start to become kind of like less hazy and like clarity of like what you might take a stab at that has created this? When did that go down?
I feel like there's like two phases. Phase one is my childhood, because ever since I was little, I've always known I was going to be an artist.
Musician.
I know, because the way I would play, my form of play was always music. It would be standing on top of the bed pretending my sisters were my fans, or like building a studio in my room. My dad was a DJ, so he had like a tape recorder, and I would like pretend to be singing my tracks. So that's how I know it's just my spirit.
Yep.
But I will say I had the worst stage fright for most of my life. I was so scared to sing in front of people, which is what made me start my YouTube channel. So it all works out in the end. But when I got to college, I started doing open mics every week. And that's when I really committed to
Was that in the Seattle area or no?
In LA. I went to USC, not even with the intention to graduate. I knew I was going to be an artist, but I knew I had to
get to LA.
I need to get to LA. I need to get over this
fear. So you weren't watching USC football and rooting for Sam Darnold to become New York
Everyone was out the dorm, so that's when I record my songs.
Yeah,
and I put them out on SoundCloud, and I would do open mics every week, and I would take these opening slots for performances.
At that point in your life, if I may interject,
yes, please.
Who were you looking up to musically?
I was really looking up to like SZA, Frank Ocean. Those are my main influences at that time. I mean,
because she's looking up to people that like are, I feel like, are modern. Children. I thought she was going to say like Marvin Gaye or like Prince or something.
I'm very much inspired by like D'Angelo, Erykah Badu.
Okay, good,
just as
good.
Much.
I feel better.
Yeah, thank you for making the OG feel a little bit better.
No,
SZA, Frank. I mean, both of that. If you like, I don't know how deep you go. Like, I don't know, like. They've been around for a while, maybe not to the level of fame they're at, especially SZA now. So happy for her, but like,
it's not underground.
Like those are so new.
I know. I just, you know.
I mean,
I feel what you're
saying. I feel like I was listening for just now like
know
13
how
years
different
ago.
Our age gap is by her answer.
How old are you? You look young. How old are you? You look pretty young.
I'm 48.
Wow, you look good, man.
I'm 48.
You
look
good.
Great
are
too.
Are you 75? 1975?
Yeah, 1975.
1975 jersey right here in the house.
Like. But I was born in the USSR in 75.
Okay, a little bit different.
What's your birthday?
March 7th.
Oh, you're older. November 14th. You're so old.
Oldest person in the room.
So that's what was going on. So you were scared. Even though you were doing it in front of your sisses, outside of that, you were like, fuck that shit. I'm scared. You were worried about judgment?
Judgment, mainly judgment. I feel like I was like, my voice isn't the best voice. I'm not the best performer. Like things that
you didn't know at that point that you didn't need to be the best at anything. If you were, if you had it and you were good enough that you could really do it.
Yes.
Like, because when I think, even when you were talking, I was like, man, I should put out music. I swear to God, when you were literally talking, I'm like, I think it's time for me to put out music.
Downloads.
Because I feel like I can really spit bars, but I have no musical talent. And I mean zero. And I mean like Robert Parrish, which is double zero.
He wore double zero.
But like, But I'm kind of like, man, even with Double Zero, I think I can pull it off with all the fucking bullshit that they do now with auto-tune and this, that. I feel like I could figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't realize at that point that you had enough of everything to pull it off.
Yes.
Makes sense.
That's honestly it. Yeah. It's like you go up on stage and you feel that, you try to understand what people are going through their minds. You can't really know what's happening, but I'm like, oh, they're judging me. They're thinking this, they're thinking that. But that's what made me start my shows with a meditation, because I would have to calm myself down because I couldn't even breathe when I would go on stage. So I would breathe, ask the crowd to breathe with me. And then over time, that turned into a whole thing that I do.
Do you still get stage fright?
That.
No, I love being on stage now.
Oh, now you turned it into an addiction.
Up. It's like, I can't wait to go on
stage.
Turning
your fear into
Have you done public speaking?
Yeah, I used to be really nervous. I hate it.
And have you?
Yeah, a lot, yeah.
Do you still, all three of you, so all of you do it, I do as well, you still get that adrenaline rush that is like a mix of confidence, concern. Like, I'm a very, like, highly compensated public speaker and, like, have one of those careers.
Yeah. Mm.
And I, Dustin, I broke something. And I still sometimes, once in a while, have the fun, I would call it once every seven times, the second before I go on stage, I have this thought of like, is this gonna, because I do full improv. When I tell you, right, that's like, you know, like the second before I'm on stage, I'm like talking to the office, I'm like, tomorrow we gotta do the meet, like the second before, they're like, and Gary, like Vaynerchuk, and I'm like, all right, make sure we send this to the client tomorrow. Like, I'm working, I'm 100%.
Down again.
I'm 100% improv.
Just read from the heart. I'm
100% improv.
But do you still get nervous ever?
Well, it's not that I get nervous, but because I'm 100% improv, I do have this one out of every seven times. Uh-huh. I'm like, is this going to be the time where I don't know what to say? Because it flows. It's full. Back full to music. Yeah. I'm the guy, if I was a rapper, I would go in
freestyle
completely from the top of the dome.
Yep, completely.
And so anyway, for the three of you, you're still getting those mix of energies. Even you at this point, you say you love it, but there's still some mix of that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You?
Not really. Not. You know what my nervousness comes from? Will they show up?
Oh, interesting.
So if I'm not organizing the people to come into the seats, I'm good. But if I'm responsible for bringing people into their seats, I want to walk out and know that if there's like three people in a room and 100 empty seats, I get like really, really nervous.
I'm so the other way. When I tell you,
yeah.
I have no attachment to my self-worth based on attendance. If two people show up, I get fired up.
That's
because
awesome.
My brain goes into... This doesn't represent if I'm good or not. Like, clearly something went wrong. There shouldn't be two people here when there should be 1,000. But my brain very quickly goes to, these two fucking people have just walked in.
You just changed your life.
To the ultimate fucking experience.
I'm trying to train myself for that.
Bro, I'm telling you, go there. I'm like, you two?
Come on
you
stage.
Won.
Like, you're
because I'm about to fucking change your life. We might become a family. Come with me. Travel home with me. Like, I just think you can make lemons, lemonade, that whole thing. Like, what? Like, to me, it's like, what?
Yeah.
Were like, back to judgment. Like, what?
Were you always that way? Did you learn that?
I got very fortunate in that I had a lot of adversity as a kid. Mm. And I had, like, incredible mothering. Mm. And, something I've started to talk about a little bit more is, like, how I crushed peer pressure in high school. Mm. And now I've decided that if you do that, there's nothing even close after that when you get older. And I really crushed high school. Like, if my high school friends are even in the chat right now, like, they know I was weird as fuck. Mm. Like, friends with everyone. And I was in the 90s. Like, now kids are trying to be nicer to each other. This was like no fucking, like, Jersey? And we graduated in 94 or 93?
93.
Okay, I'm 94. So we grew up in the exact same year. People were pantsing each other in the hallway.
Yes. Do you know what a book check is?
No.
You know what a book check is? See? Book check is when you're carrying a shit ton of books and a kid just comes in, boom.
Book check.
They really
check.
Do that?
That's by the way, that's nothing. Do you know what pantsing is?
Is that wedgie? Yeah.
Yep.
The other way.
Walking in pants. I've seen teenage girls get pants in the middle of a fucking hallway. I mean, I think I'll get canceled if I finish my story. It's absurd. And the prerequisite, if you wanted to be in the top 10%, of popularity, you had to have 60% mean in you because it was just a currency.
Yes.
And I just was not ever willing to compromise.
Hmm. Yeah.
I had all the pieces to be as popular as I wanted to because I was charismatic and I was who I was and I wasn't scared. But the reason I never went to the tippy top and just stayed there and I went coast to coast and with different friend groups and genders, races, like coolness factors, like my single best friend, Brandon Warnicke, who I talked to today, who runs Wine Library, my best friend in the world. He was so nerdy. The glasses, if I showed you Brandon Warnicke's high school photo right now, he makes Urkel look like fucking Brad Pitt.
Whoa.
And I didn't give any fucks because he was the best dude. And that was my focus. And this all goes back to your question. Yes, I've always been like that. Mm. But more importantly, the reason I'm telling this story is singularly to get everyone else like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm desperate to build people's self-esteem. Mm. I'm desperate to get people to lean into confidence. I'm desperate for people to understand that if someone's mean to you, that is no reflection on you, it's a reflection on them.
Yeah. Mm.
Someone shits on you, don't feel bad for you, feel bad for them. Because they're in a bad place.
Yeah.
Could you imagine walking around Earth trying to make people feel bad?
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
And now the sad thing
is, isn't that a funny way to think about it?
The sad thing is now you could do it from your living room sofa and just talk shit in the comments everywhere.
And when
that's the modern day version of that.
And brother, when I tell you every single time I see it, I feel bad for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I just don't know how to feel bad for me. Mm. I check myself.
I love
I don't want to be high on my own supply. Mm-hmm. I read it. I read it and I try to take it in.
Mm.
Because I don't want to become delusional and overconfident. Mm. I don't want to misstep.
Right.
Because the way I see my career, and I'm curious, we'll jump back into y'all three. Love for you to answer this. I think my career, it doesn't matter. Mm. You're on the beginnings journeys of this. You've done some real shit, my guy, and you're a fucking legend. Mm. I kind of think about my career as like, I'm aware of what I've done.
Mm.
I got a lot of wins, but I think of this as sports.
Mm.
Like, you know, like Roger Federer wasn't the same Roger Federer last year than he was 7 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tiger. I watched Larry Bird not look like the Larry Bird that I saw as a little kid.
Mm.
I watched Jordan and Kobe and many others. I saw what Drew Brees and I saw Peyton Manning's last year. That wasn't the Peyton, like, and Beckham and Ronaldo, like it happens to everyone. Mm. And that's how I think about my career. The reason I listen to the negative or the pushback is because who gives a fuck what I did yesterday?
Yeah.
Like this could be the beginning of me not being as good at what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So humility is my favorite relationship.
Mm.
On the same token, I have complete conviction and confidence of who the fuck I am.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I take it first passes humility. Is there anything behind this that is right?
Mm.
Am I losing a step? Am I getting delusional? Have I lost touch?
Mm.
You get really scared when you come from nothing and you go somewhere of losing touch.
Yeah.
The street's not fucking with you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But quickly, because I'm pretty good at that and I check myself, quickly I go into deep compassion and sympathy that this person's in a bad fucking place.
Mm.
Yeah. You know what it is? Like we're all only as good as our last output, right? You could have fucking 9 Grammy award winning albums. But then like if your 10th one is a dud, you are unfortunately judged on that. And same with you, right? We're not accountants or lawyers where like there is a hard right and wrong, right?
Yeah.
If you're a rock star accountant, it's because you've never made a clerical error on your tax returns.
Mm.
You're a rock star, right? But us, it's like subjective, you know? So we 100%. Do have to be, we always have that sort of like,
what do you most, let's go around the horn, let's go backwards.
Yeah.
What do you most, oh actually, what the fuck, we haven't even gotten deep yet, go ahead. I'm sorry, I'm too excited.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it.
No,
I'm enjoying
deep,
it.
Please.
What's the question, what were you asking me?
Actually, let me ask you this. What are you most scared of right now? No bullshit, say something that you didn't even think you were gonna say coming into this. What are you most scared of right now?
That's a good question. I think I'm scared of building, well, what I've built, I'm so proud of, I've had so much impact. And I always feel like that PWJ moment in lockdown will always be like my career defining moment. I often think, what can I do that will be more meaningful than that?
Because like, it was so big.
I just felt like so big, but also I felt so connected. I was like, this is, because it was my dream. My dream was to get kids in the UK moving, exercising, like really, really kind of looking after their mental health. And so I think, how can I eclipse that moment? And a fear of kind of like, when I do, if I run out of energy for this, who's going to carry on the legacy? Who's going to keep the mission alive, you know, because I'm so connected to it. I'm so passionate about young people, mental health, and getting kids exercising and eating as well. Because we, you know, we're living in a time now where kids are suffering, like mental health's increasing, social media's taking over, technology. And so it's that fear of kind of, yeah, when I, how
that you'll never do anything more meaningful than what you just did. Yeah. It's a really good, by the way, it's real. Back to music, it's rare for people to make a more meaningful album than their first one.
Mm-hmm. I think it's because people aren't growing.
I think it's because they had their whole life to do the first one.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about I'm sure you do. You're a musician. You know, you have your whole, I'm with you. Mm. I'm not saying it's impossible. We've seen tons of people do it.
Yeah.
I'm saying most people's most meaningful album is their first.
True, most people.
And they had their whole life to do it.
Yeah.
Mm. Same happened with my cookbook. My first cookbook, I sold like 1.4 million copies. It was the second best-selling cookbook of all time. And then everything after that was it's in the shadows, but I don't have that kind of connection at all.
And by the way,
I don't think
those books right there. I've written 5 New York Times best-selling books. The first one, Crush It, it was my purest expression of what I'd been thinking. It was timing. I predicted like influencers and YouTubers and like that was a moment in time. Me coming out and being like, you can make money on social media. It's not very profound right now. When I wrote that shit in 2008, people were like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, true.
You know, and there's moments in time, you know? What about you?
Not the same, ironically. Maybe in fashion, like you wouldn't say that in fashion, people's first collections are their best ever. Cause I think there's this like cumulative build on the seasonal thing.
Yeah, because I agree. And plus with music, especially if they're the writer.
Yeah.
Again, it's like you're a book. An album, you're writing.
Mm. Yeah.
With fashion, I think it's more like entrepreneurship. You're gaining skills along the way.
Exactly. Sometimes and it's a collaboration. Yeah, it's constant collaboration. Mm. I feel the most empathy for musicians because of what you have to do. Like, just go up there. The only profession I feel worse for than musicians is comedians.
Oh, felt.
Comedians. For them to just go off on stage, no hype man, no band, me laugh, motherfucker, is like.
Literally, I'm completely the other way. Right now, I think the people that have it best are comedians.
What?
Because they're the only ones that can spit facts without people having feelings.
Okay, true, true.
Understood.
Right?
Understood.
We need to get like, out of
comedians, man. Oh my God.
Really? I'm such a feelings person.
I'm using it as a different slang term. All I care about is emotional intelligence. Mm. I'm all about feelings. Mm. I mean, we're in a very entitled state right now. Mm. I think I think everything's best when it's balanced. Mm. Mm-hmm. Balance is something I think a ton about. Mm. I'm obsessed with this concept of purple. Mm. In the UK and the US, the political systems, though they're flipped, are red and blue.
Right, right, right.
And I think all the answers are purpled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just think we've gotten so in our feelings about telling, we spend so much energy explaining why shit is fucked up for us that it makes us unhappy. Mm. We're just pointing fingers, which makes us hopeless. When you don't think it's your fault, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
There's something amazing with accountability. Mm. If everybody, all the 100 plus people that are watching right now and the millions that will listen to this podcast over the next year or two, if every one of them said to themselves right now with anything they're unhappy about, that it's their fault or they're capable of getting out of it, their lives would be 10,000 times better. Now, of course, when I say things like that, people are like, right now driving and say, fuck you, Gary, my dad just got fucking cancer and that's what I'm upset about. How is that my fault? Of course not. Mm. That's not what I'm referring to. But if you're like, fuck my job, post on LinkedIn until you get new job offers. Mm. Mm-hmm. Like no one can complain about their job on earth. Mm. This is how I really believe this because we live in this new world. People will talk about all the downsides of social. Every human who doesn't like their job, all they have to do is post about what they know in their career constantly on LinkedIn and they will have unlimited job offers.
Yeah, it's true.
I think about that shit. Accountability is an intoxicating drug to happiness.
It is. It's like realizing it's all here outward. It reminds me of confidence because I feel like recently I've been stepping into deeper levels of confidence.
I love that.
But realizing it's an empowered self thing. And if it's embodiment and if you can embody confidence, embody self-knowing and it doesn't derive from out here, it's the most sustainable form. And the same with happiness. It's like your happiness has to come from your own connection to your source with your own sense of self. And that's the most sustainable way to be happy.
Of course, because that game is simple.
Simplicity
is the fucking anecdote.
Yeah.
What are you most excited about?
Oh, I don't get to answer the one I'm most scared about.
Nope. We moved on.
Good news. You're in full control. You don't have to answer my question. You can answer the question prior that you want to answer.
I would like to address the most scary part.
Then we would love to hear Jeff Staple.
Yes.
All right. The most scary thing for me is that, Gary, I want to know if you go through
this.
We spent decades hustling 24/7, 365 to build to where we are today. Mm-hmm. Now we have teams of dozens, hundreds of people, right? And in order to let them do what they do well, you have to let go.
Yes.
Right? So my fear is the letting go, and does it spiral out of what I've built? Or do I really trust that the people that I've built, the team that I've built, can actually handle it, and I can actually let go, breathe, and maybe build a new chapter? But that letting go is always a little bit very scary.
Respect, and I understand. For me, it's not, because I'm not scared of cleaning up the mess.
That just unlocked a lot in my head. Yep.
Yeah. You like that?
I like that a lot.
Real talk. This goes back to not being scared of two people showing up. It's the same energy.
Oh.
Both you bringing that up and this is your thing. I think the reason I do so many damn things and have so much going on is because I'm genuinely not scared of multiple things. I'm not scared of accountability, that it was my fault to give them too much room.
Mm-hmm.
So that's first. Two, the I'm sorry. Like, if I let somebody do something that was for something important and it failed, I'm very comfortable going to the person being like, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I sent Tyler to go do something with you and we got that relationship and he doesn't do it well, even though he's been here for a decade and you know him and all that,
yeah,
and it doesn't go well, I'm comfortable sending the text and be like, yo, can I call you for 5 minutes? Be like, Jeff, I should have I'm sorry, my guy, I really thought we had it. Mm-hmm. I should have been there. I apologize.
Right.
I'm very comfortable with the accountability. I like to support my team when they make mistakes. I don't yell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to hold them accountable. Like, yo, we fucked that up. Let's own that shit. They'll tell you right now we're going through a lot of different patterns with my content. Mm-hmm. I love jumping in me like, I suck, I own this. Like, you know, like, I'm very good at that. So I'm lucky in that one. I think one of the reasons I have 7,340,000 businesses is because I love letting go, because I'm just not scared of the mess.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Because you're always so positive. Is there anything you're scared of? Is there anything in life you're fearful of?
Things I can't control. So there's nothing in business I am scared of. Mm. Nothing.
If you lost it all, you'd just start again. You know that, don't you? Because you could just rebuild.
In a way that's super weird. Like, in a way that's probably not healthy. In a way that I get concerned that I may subconsciously sabotage myself.
To test yourself to see if you could do it.
Jeff, it's so fucked up. It's like some, when I watched that Rocky where he lost everything and was back in Philly, like 2 minutes in, once I understood what the movie was about, I noticed that I was smiling and I was like, stop it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something very fucked up about how much I love the dirt and the zero and the process and the not being known and the under, like, this goes back to like, I probably, like, this is now getting, I'll be vulnerable. I'm not even sure. I'll give you an example. Like VaynerMedia, VaynerX. VaynerMedia and VaynerX is a 2,000 person, $350 million a year business. I run it. I started from scratch with my brother AJ. 82% of the people that see my content, they're like, he's an influencer. He's a motivational speaker. Like, my most substantial business, and definitely, and you know this, like what I do in nonprofit, what I do, like the best shit about me on paper is the thing that least is known about me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Like, I almost feel like I'm self-sabotaging in a lot of ways to stay underrated.
Yeah. Mm.
I just love being that person. I don't even like being where I'm at professionally now. I feel like I'm known and I've got cred. And like, so when I start shit now, people think it is gonna do well.
Mm.
And I like when people think it's not gonna do well.
Mm.
And so I've got my own little spiel on that.
I'll give you a nightmare scenario.
Please.
Gun to your head, choose one business, dismantle everything else.
Won't do it.
Blow my head off?
There's two ways to answer it. Of course not. I don't wanna die, I wanna play. But I would tell you,
yeah.
I would be heartbroken and not successful in running one business. I need to do lots of things because I'm too creative.
Uh-huh.
I would make a lot more money if I shut down everything and did one.
Mm-hmm.
But money's not the driver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the game.
Yeah.
And here's a big one. This goes back to why I'm not scared to clean the mess or have two people show up. The sheer detachment I have for my success and Gary Vee of it all is pretty staggering. What am I scared of? I'm scared of someone in my family dying.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Mm. Literally nothing else. Everything else I can take care of.
Yeah. Mm.
I can go to zero. I can deal with all of you saying, see, he wasn't good. You all got tricked by him. See, he wasn't good. I'll fucking eat that shit. I will fucking sit in a fucking dumpster with that phone, live in a fucking dumpster and read all those comments and eat it and completely build from that moment. Just for that, like, that's what I live for.
Mm-hmm.
I love adversity.
The thing about your well, the reason I've followed you for so many years is because you've been saying the same thing for so many, you've been so consistent. And so when you say that, I believe you. I mean, a lot of people say, I'm not about the money, it's not about the success, but I can see how much you do love building. And my brother Nick is quite similar in that respect. He we're on this journey together and he's the CEO, but I genuinely think that's the why you're successful, because you care about the fun of being
in business. This is the most obvious thing to entrepreneurs. First of all, I'm so happy that the gleam is coming off entrepreneurship. I like that the youngsters, like, it's just a little less cool than it was 3 years ago. That's good. That's good. Because that's a lonely, hard game.
Mm. Yeah.
People want to be creators, and that's entrepreneurship. I get it. But yeah, I mean, purebred entrepreneurs are in it for the game. Nobody believes them. Nobody believes them. Mm. Nobody without money believes them. Mm. And I understand. I'm empathetic. It also doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because all those kids that then come up, the amount of people that come up to me and say, I hated you coming up the game because I didn't believe you, because I wanted the Lambo and the Ferrari, but then I got there and it wasn't fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not.
Yeah.
It's just not. Stuff, and you make the best stuff, and I like stuff, but stuff is garbage.
Yes.
Mm. And if you're only about stuff, status, blue check marks, who's on your hand, money in your bank account, house, private plane, I just know it leads to unhappiness, mm-hmm. which is why I don't post it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can look at my content. I do not post.
Your bling.
I don't think it brings any value. People are like, no, Gary, it's aspirational. I'm like, bro, more people are laying in bed feeling envy than they're feeling inspired.
Mm-hmm.
I promise. Yeah. And so I don't know.
What are your thoughts on comparison? Like, how do you?
Nobody else's life has anything to do with me.
Mm.
SZA's Grammys don't mean shit to you. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't mean that you're not good. Mm. Like I get pumped when entrepreneurs build bigger things. I'm pumped that there's NFT projects that are doing better than mine right now. I'm pumped that there's agencies bigger than mine. Mm-hmm. I'm pumped that there's people that have more followers than me. I'm pumped that there's people that sell more wine to me. I'm competitive, I wanna do great, but why in the world would I be mad at someone?
Mm.
I'm not inspired by it. Some people go that route. They're like, oh, I'm not. I'm just in my shit. Nobody else's life has anything to do with you. Mm. The comparison thing is just another indicator to insecurity.
Mm.
Can I ask a question? Are you both parents? Have you got kids?
No. Yes.
No, you've got kids. So maybe it's for you, because I've got three kids. I've got one on the way as well. I love kids.
Wow.
I love being a dad.
You like making the kids?
Yeah, I love making the kids. But one of the things
I have a little fun here.
One of the things I battle with is, you know, the balance. I'm with them a lot, but I find it hard to be present. I think with the social media, like, it's such a pull, it's such an addictive thing. And it's mainly because of the connection. Like, I do a lot of DMs and voice notes. I'm so plugged into that. And so I have this thing where I'm with them, but I'm not fully present. And I wonder, have you got any advice on that? Do you struggle with that yourself?
You never share that part.
I never share my personal life. And what he's talking about, I would say that I've ebbed and flowed.
Hmm.
You know, when you're super passionate, you're super connected, you're gonna have moments. So there's been plenty of moments where I wish I was more in tune. But on the flip side, over the last 4 to 5 years, I've gotten much better at full disconnection when I'm with them.
Mm.
Just unplug Twitch, because that's why I'd have to physically turn the phone off and leave it in another drawer or something.
That's exactly right.
Just to be really engaged,
That's right, that's exactly right.
Do you incorporate your kids into your content?
Yeah, so sometimes I see the world through a lens of content, you know what I mean? Like, my kids are so cute and they'll do something, and I'm like, oh, that's, because I've now got my little daughter, she's cooking with me, like, she's 5 and she loves cooking, so I like sharing that because it's inspiration. I think we need to get our kids cooking.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to be like a reason that I'm sharing. I don't want it to be like, it's like I need her in every video, but I do share my family, but also
that's probably the most challenging thing that people are thinking through. As you know, I've never shared my personal life ever. I think making that choice for a child, for me, and I judge no one else, everyone should do what they think is right for their family. For me, the thing I think a lot about is making that choice for a child.
Right.
I see a lot of people really blasting out their kids, and those kids are getting stopped in neighborhoods. Like, choosing fame is a fucking hard game. Mm. And then watching so many parents choose it for their children, I think some kids are gonna flourish with it. I think some kids are not gonna do well at all with it. Mm. And I think you don't know.
Yeah,
early on. And so again, that's no judgment. I really like talking about macro parenting stuff. I never ever would ever think about telling someone how to parent their kid, because it's a very individual game.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we've lived through the full cycle yet.
Yeah,
we're the first gen.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's like eighth place trophies. They were well intended. Mm-hmm. but they fucked up the world. Mm-hmm. They taught people that losing is bad, and they taught indifference, and a lot of that has led to mass insecurity. I will tell you right now, eighth place trophies have done more emotional damage than social media, and it's not even close. And I know that most people don't agree with me, but social media is an exposer. It's an empty vessel.
What do you mean by eighth place trophies? Like in competitions and things?
Eliminating winning and losing for children because we didn't want kids to be upset that they lost.
So you give them a trophy.
The demonizing of losing in modern parenting in the last 30 years.
There's still a first and a second and a third.
Everyone's a winner.
All right.
Has destroyed Earth.
Really? Just destroyed motivation, ambition, you mean?
It is suppressed. It is confused alpha ambitious people. They're kids. They're 5 and 6. Wait a minute, I'm trying to win. Don't cry when you lose. It's just a game. Fuck you, it's just a game. I'm built as a fucking competitive alpha. So you're confusing someone who actually was gifted with something. And then on the other side, you've taught the insecure that losing is terrible. We as your parent, when you're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, are so scared for you to lose that we're gonna create a game of not losing. Thus, when you go into the real world, you're like, this is why everyone's so scared of everything. Sports and fighting and punishment and all these things, they had value. Balance. We went too far. When like letting your kids win and everything, they know you're doing it. It makes them insecure.
Interesting, yeah.
Well-intended, remarkably well-intended. By the way, one man's point of view, one man who reads hundreds of thousands of DMs over the last decade from 18 to 25-year-olds at scale and sees it very clearly.
Well, back to your point, I recently posted a thing about my wife and our anniversary, and it was like the highest performing post. And I have an agent, and he was like, listen, this posted like 12x better than any other post. You need to post your wife all the time now. And I'm like, I don't know. So it's, I have to answer this conundrum of like, do I really want to expose my private life because it performs better analytically for the algo?
People want to come into your personal life to then judge your personal life, to tear you down and then build you back up and then tear you down, because that's what we do. We build up Britney, then we tear down Britney, then Britney's back, bitch. This is what the world does. Build up, tear down, build up, tear down. Like, it is what pop culture, society, humans do, because it's the escapism for humans to escape what they're upset about. This goes to Misery Loves Company. This is why so many people comment negative things. It's an endorphin hit to tear someone down to make yourself feel better.
I think there's actually it's a different piece of content that might have caused it to be perform better, because it's not the same thing they're used to seeing all the time.
I would say yes, comma, unlikely. The family thing is real. No, no, your point is well, and you're so advanced now with like, you know, when we mix it up. If I do a mocktails video, it gets 3 million views. That said, the much more macro trend is when people introduce kids or family, it explodes. It is the thing people want. Like, it is just very real. People want to get
in. They want to get in.
Yeah. We're nosy.
Yeah, yeah.
We are a rubber-necking society. Reality TV worked for a reason, and that shit's not even real. So when we're doing this shit, it's fucking real. Dustin, I want to take some questions from the Twitch.
Wait, I have one thought.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to keep jamming. He's going to keep looking at the screen. He'll interject. He's very good. He'll jump
in. Yes, please interject.
We'll see how good he is, actually. But, like, go ahead.
I'm curious. I do think there's an element of the person attracting that type of reaction from people. Like, when I go to concerts, I feel like sometimes people's fans are a reflection of the energy of the performer.
100%.
If you're a performer that's insecure, you're bringing to you people who will be more mean to you.
Agreed.
Like, I feel like my fan base and the way that I interact, I get a lot of kindness. And when people look into my personal life, it's a very kind interaction. So I don't fully believe that if I share more that I will
be torn
down.
You just haven't hit scaled yet.
But I get, do I agree with that? I don't know if I agree with that.
Here's the good news. I could be wrong, but I'm looking forward to your message in 6 years when you hit scale. I lived it. 99% of my energy, 99% of my comments for 6 years were positive. They're scale. You start tipping over and people don't know you like that.
Yeah.
When you have 100 million fans, 50 million fans, 10 million fans, they don't know you the same way your original 100,000 know.
Yeah.
You got it? So what happens is they don't understand the context. Plus, as you get bigger, there's default, subconscious, by default, envy and jealousy that doesn't exist on the way up. Mm. They're cheering for you now.
Mm.
So there's new context.
Mm.
It is like
Beyonce
law of averages.
Unlimited good stuff.
It's like law of math,
that's right. It's just math. It's
if you let 100 million more people into your room, inevitably, even if it's 1%, are going to be like not knowing, don't have the context, and maybe have the haterade on you. You know what I mean?
And plus you evolve.
Yeah.
You know, like you evolve, you start touching on different things. As your platform gets bigger, you decide to get involved in things. All of a sudden, if you touch anything that is even remotely political, half the people are mad at you forever. Well, like there's
and
real
then the
shit.
First 100,000 want the original Umi.
Yeah.
Right? Like you look, how many times, like you look at Lauryn Hill and like she said it so many times, like people just want the Fugees Lauryn Hill.
Mm.
Always. Like, sorry.
Big shout out to Pucking Blitz.
She shows up.
First
know, she's
time Twitch. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
People love to build up their band. Everyone loved Nirvana when they were finding them in Seattle back in the day. And then when they sell out, they're mad at them because they were yours.
Mm.
When I transitioned from wine to business, so many people had feelings.
Mm.
Like, just keep doing wine. Why are you doing this? Dust?
Question from Donside Witch. How does everyone here deal with trolls?
Well, we've been talking about it. we've been talking about it, but to your point, not directly. Mm-hmm. Jeff, let's go around the horn. How do you deal with people coming in that are really trying to tear you down? You mute them, you delete them, you engage with them, you ignore them, you dwell on it, a mix of all of it.
I definitely don't dwell on it. I've built enough of a force field of a Captain America shield that it doesn't bother me at all. In fact, I'm sort of on the Gary tip where it's like, I eat it now. And it's like, to me, like people leave really negative comments. And my friends are like, why don't you delete that comment? It looks terrible. I'm like, I love it. I want it to like shine on my feed because people who are smart will be like, yo, Jeff moves the crowd. Like, look at this dude so mad at Jeff. Like he's really able to like shift perception, right? So I learned to leave it. Every once in a while, I learned this from Gary, like address them. And 9 out of 10 times, they'll be like, I'm sorry, I was having a bad day. Like, 100%. I didn't even know what I was saying. You know what I mean?
I used to apply to every negative comment from 2007.
He's crazy. That's like sadomasochistic.
Turn around sort of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't just be like, I wasn't even trying to flip them. I just have love for, do you know that I don't like dogs?
Segue.
I like to throw that as a shocking statement because everyone loves it. It's I don't not like dogs, but let me tell you what I mean by that. I love people so much. I love people the way people love dogs. People universally like dogs by default. I watch human after human.
I do
love
that too.
Dogs by default. You don't even know this dog. You're like, nah. I do that with people. I'm like, oh, nice little pink. Like, I just love y'all.
Yeah.
And I fucking mean it, bro, from the bottom of my heart. And yet the rest of the world doesn't do it. I watch people after people fucking be cynical, hold off people, look and be like just the cynicism. Mm. Because they're trying to protect themselves because they're soft.
Mm.
They're weak.
Mm.
They're scared of judgment.
It's wild to me.
You know? And so to me, you okay over there? To me, that's how I see it. I'm not trying to flip them and make them fans. I'm trying to just be there for someone who's not in a good spot.
Yeah, nice.
How do you guys deal with it?
Shall I go first?
Do you get them?
Yeah.
First of all.
I think on the way up, I think quite a lot in the fitness industry, there's a lot of egos, a lot of people kind of a bit resentful and you know, didn't really like maybe what things I was saying. So I was always in the early days, like, I didn't sort of promote calorie counting. You know, everyone was like, if it fits your macros and track all this. And I was always like, look, I just want to get people cooking. So I said something once about calories and I don't put them in my books and things. But to be honest, I used to get a lot of people would make podcasts and videos about me, mainly in the UK. But once I'd done Pee with Joe and I got all their mums and grandmas and kids and nephews exercising, it's like it almost disappeared sort of thing. And I've done so much good now that I've got a very positive sentiment on my channels. But I've always in the past ignored, if it's really offensive, I'll block it and delete. If it's about a client, because I post transformation like before and after, and sometimes there'll be a mean comment like,
right,
she looked better before, and I hate that. It upsets me.
Yeah,
so
of course.
I'd always clear that out. But ultimately, yeah, I think you can nurture your own community. I do think goodness attracts goodness.
I couldn't agree more.
Over time, you know.
But scale does come, that's all. It just comes in.
But like,
yeah, exactly. But I'm agreement. How are you?
You get it.
Dwell?
No.
Do you get them though?
Not really.
Yeah, you're so positive.
Not
like, who
really.
Can hate?
I feel like the trolls I get are like inappropriate comments more
right.
than like
they
mean comments.
Hook it up.
Yeah, they say like just weird stuff, and I just laugh, and then I just keep. I'm like,
just makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me, though, those types of things.
Nothing bothers me that people do. I have zero expectation of human beings.
That's a good place to be.
No shit. Umi, I'm telling you right now, you want to love life, have 0.0 expectation and be grateful for the good interactions and understand the bad ones.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Clip that.
That's the clip.
Ready? There it is. That's my life. Zero expectations. Be grateful when you come across wonderful people that you're excited to take from stranger to acquaintance. We were strangers, then we were acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
Acquaintances to friends and friends to family.
Mm.
And the ones that don't go well, don't be mad or feel bad.
Mm.
Understand.
Mm.
Not everybody was as fortunate as you to have an emotional foundation. Not everybody was born as talented. Mm. Not everybody put in the work.
Mm.
Not everybody saw optimism and practicality. They chose cynicism. They were parented with cynicism. I had two opposite parents. Mm. Both came from very challenging upbringings. They were born in what was the North Korea of its time, the USSR. Mm. You couldn't leave the country. Both of them lost a parent by the time they were 15. Mm. Like, but my mom is purely positive and my dad was incredibly cynical. Mm. But I knew my dad's mom. She was more cynical than him.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had kids so young in Russia. I knew my grandma's mom, my great grandma. And she was even more cynical than my grandma.
Mm.
So how could I be mad at my dad? Mm. He was in that framework. Definitely. You know how many people are mad at their parents without realizing that their grandparents made their parents? The one that drove me always crazy as I was growing up was people being super mad in their 20s and 30s at their parents, but loving their grandparents. But you could see that the grandparent was the one that made the parent. Like, you're a hypocrite. Just because Nana gave you lollipops and didn't do it to you doesn't mean that, like, so like, just like, fucking no expectations.
Yeah.
Bro, nobody owes me shit. There's not one human of the 8 billion running around. I'm just fascinated by people believing that someone is supposed to.
Mm.
That word supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Or should.
Should, I don't like should. No. I never use should.
Fuck ego. Those two words.
Mm-mm.
Before we get out of here, what else is, you got something else?
Yeah,
no,
I'm saying they can't hear me.
Okay.
Ann Bag asks, if you're full of ideas, how do you choose which to follow and which to let go?
Great, we're gonna go around the horn on this one.
Mm.
There's no doubt that all three of you have plenty of ideas.
Mm.
That is just a prerequisite to get to a place in your career. Umi, how do you think about picking the different ideas in your mind?
I go by my heart, what brings me the most joy. I usually wait until it brings me joy. And once I feel this feeling of excitement.
So you're touching and flirting and kind of doing a little bit of everything?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, I like that.
Yeah, and then I feel like I pursue and jump into the thing that brings me the most joy, because I feel like then you align with an effortless timeline in which you're not overextending your own energy. You're riding the energy of the universe and also your own excitement, which makes things flow. And I also wanted to tap into your thing about people's first albums being their best albums, because it kind of connects to this thing. I really feel like artists can make better albums after that, but after their first album, they disconnect with themselves.
I couldn't agree
so
more.
They don't tap in with their spirit.
They get caught up in the stuff.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. They want the trophies. They want the house. I fully agree.
So if you keep true to your heart, I feel like you allow yourself to take your time. You allow yourself to create.
This is why I'm completely detached from my success.
You need to be so you can create the best output. That's very true.
100%. Fuck that guy.
Fuck that.
I hate Gary V.
You're like, okay, cool, whatever.
I love that, but I love your energy. Mm. You're really putting out a good vibe, you know?
Mm, thank you.
I feel it. Yeah, I actually, for the first time ever, I started writing. I've got a journal by my bed and I started writing ideas. Mm-hmm. And I had this a few hours ago, a few days ago, I had a couple of like ideas come to me. And it always comes from like, what would I enjoy doing? And what would give me kind of, what would I learn from? And what would make me feel happy? And I've got this connection to young people. I do a lot of work with schools. I do tours of the UK. I've got like thousands of kids a week. But I also like being with my grandma and old people, learning from, you know, like generations that have got more wisdom. So I've got this idea of going into like care homes, because a lot of times old people are forgotten about, they're not exercising, and dementia and Alzheimer's kicks in and they just
team,
left
can
alone.
We please send him my retirement home podcast that just came out? I'm the exact same way as you, brother.
I really like that.
I knew I have always liked you. I haven't heard a lot of people talk about this. I'm full youth culture and full OG 80-year-old shit, full.
Yeah, just think about, well, the conversation would be amazing and just like getting them moving and finding out about their lives and like what was life like back in, you know, 50, 60 years ago. I don't know. So basically for me, it's like an emotional thing. I like stories, I like real people, I like connection. And as long as it's something like that, that's valuable, that could I could share a story or share someone's journey, I think that's really uplifting. So that's kind of, my ideas always come from that originally. Like,
Love.
It's about people, relationships, and me just talking.
I just wanted to say that sparked my mind because I'm working on an album right now. This album I'm working on is called People Stories, and it's all based on the stories of my fans and other people, and I'm just being the vessel for their storytelling.
Love.
And it makes you want to...
Sampling their words and their sort of in the song kind of thing as well, yeah. That's a lovely idea.
But that makes me think I should ask
my grandma. Can I rap on that?
Yeah, I'll send you a track. You really want
to
rap on it?
Yo, I got to fucking go to this next meeting. So Jeff, get in here and sneak in with your answer to this question.
My little thing that I do is I have in my notes app on my phone, probably like 4,000 notes. In my reminders app, I have like 300 reminders. Every time I have a thought or an idea, I stick it in there. And going back to the universe... For some reason, the universe tells me which ones start to bubble up. And I'm like, I have a note for that.
Yeah.
And then it just starts to coalesce. It's really cool how it happens. But I think there's a theme here of like listening to the universe. And I think it's agnostic of whatever you believe in.
Yeah.
But like listening to the world, the universe, your community, just pulling it out of you. Don't ever have an idea and be like, that's whack. Forget about that. Like, no, put it down. Put it in your journal. Put it in your note, whatever. It's going to bubble up if it's meant to be.
I love that.
Love that.
My answer to the question is, I guess. Which is no different than following the universe, which is no different following my spirit and my soul. And here's the insight that I have on this one. Because I wouldn't know the alternative outcome if I did something else. The reason most people don't do things is they're scared of choosing the wrong thing.
Yes.
What I know is there is no wrong thing. I passed
because you chose it. It's the right thing.
Yeah, and because you just don't know what would have happened. If I did this thing, my whole life would have been a different way. I'm grateful. And so I guess, because you have no other choice, you have to guess, feel the spirit, let it come to you, ride the energy. The actual answer is the reason people don't choose is they're scared to fail. Because they're all your ideas. They're all good. You want to eat them all.
Yeah.
But you can only eat one now. So pick it. And it will be yummy.
It'll be fine. Yeah.
And I don't want to be like, oh, I should have picked the pasta. Who gives a fuck? I ate the steak tonight.
There we go. Wise words.
Love awesome. Thank you. Love you guys. Twitch, thank you for watching. Vayner Nation, I know you love this episode. I just know how good it was. Umi, your energy is just off the charts, Jeff.
Thank you.
Boys, everybody. Joe, I'm really proud of you, bro.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for watching. I got to go to a meeting. I'm busy. Bye.